Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
What is up, you guys? Welcome to another episode of Katie Afraidy on the Fangoria Network. I'm your host, Katie Hettenbach, and today I'm so excited to be joined by Chad Archibald, Ellie O'Brien, and Shaylin Martin to talk about their new movie, It Feeds. Guys, you're not going to want to miss this interview or this movie. So without further ado, here she is.
So, first of all, congrats. You made a spooky, spooky, spooky movie that scared me last night as I'm watching it in the pitch darkness in my apartment. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Success.
You did it. You got me. Which is hard to get me. So yeah. I was like, bravo, bravo.
That's good. Yeah, we were just at Panic Fest. And I mean, it's just like a bunch of genre-loving film fans. And they're the hardest to scare, you know? So it was good. I sat at the back and I just watched everyone's heads jump. But yeah, also a lot of laughs, you know?
That's... Yeah, there are still like some weird like moments where you're like you wouldn't laugh, but then you do, and it's just and right. But you don't realize that until you watch it in front of, you know, or with a full audience.
Yeah,
is that nerve-wracking to watch in front of an audience?
Sometimes it has been in the past. This one specifically, I think it's been, I mean, I've only done it once, but it's so much fun to watch with an audience. One, I think, you know, there are a lot of comedic moments, especially with our Agatha character. But also there's like, you know, it's the best of both worlds. You got laughs, you got jumps, you got like, you know, cheers. There's a couple cheer moments that people had. Yeah, all around. I mean, I think it's a really, really fun movie to watch with people, I think.
Yeah, it is.
We've got downer movies where you just sit there and it's dead quiet the entire time. And you're like, do people like it or hate it? Does everyone want to kill themselves?
a little bit of everything. I've been to several film fest movies where normally at the end you like stand and clap. And I was the only person to stand and clap. And everyone else is like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, you know, I know they carb stomped a baby, but it was good. Like, really good. It was good. So for my viewers who maybe don't know a lot about the movie, tell us, what is It Feeds about?
Yeah, It Feeds is about a mother-daughter combo. The mother is a therapist who can actually travel into people's minds and deal with their trauma from the inside. One day, a young girl, played by Shailen, comes to their door saying that there's an entity attached to her, and this family has to kind of decide whether they want to risk themselves and help the little girl or protect themselves and ignore the situation entirely. Yeah, obviously I think someone tries to help and it all goes bad. Allie.
This girl.
So how did you come up with this story? Because this is in like the concept is wild and there's so many layers to it. So how did you come up with this?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is just, you know, a lot of movies that I really, really love and I wanted to make for a long time, like Nightmare on Elm Street and The Cell and The Ring and The Fountain. And I just, for whatever reason, it clicked one day and, you know, it started coming out and, you know, I wrote the whole first draft in 7 days and it just kind of like, the pieces were fitting together so well that I just kept writing and writing. And it really is an idea where you can kind of go like, you know, you can do anything you want, because as soon as you kind of break that realm of reality, it's like, I mean, horror films are so fun because you get to do whatever you want, right? It's like, it doesn't need to be based in reality, you know? Like, if we want to go to space and fight werewolves, we can do it, you know? So I think with this one, in a movie that was still kind of trying to be grounded in reality, as soon as you kind of break that realm of reality, you got to kind of really play with just a bunch of ideas. And, you know, I love just kind of putting these elements together. And for whatever reason, it just clicked. You know, it's like I've been writing for a long time and sometimes it takes years for something to click. And this one just kind of clicked and it all came together. And I think from the first draft to the time that we were shooting was like 6 months. I mean, we polished it all up. We got it all ready and shot the movie. It got financed with the first people that we went to. And yeah, so I don't know, it just came together. Stars aligned. I was ready to give up, you know?
it works out that way. The universe works in weird ways, but the fact that it all just lined up, boom, 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 and you got it made so quick. Oh my goodness. Bravo, bravo. So now for everybody, what was the hardest scene to film to get through? And then what was your favorite scene?
I think some of the hardest ones were also my favorites. There's a couple, like, I think my character is very headstrong in this film and gets herself into a lot of situations where one shouldn't be. So, you know, she's kind of put through the ringer, and those were the opportunities that I just came to really appreciate because, you know, it's not often that you get to quite like fight for your life in that way. Mm-hmm. So my favorite scenes were those ones where like without spoiling anything where I'm really trying to fight for my life. And I think the hardest ones, she does face a lot of trauma in this film. That is definitely the core of it. So the really emotionally heavy ones, there's some where we're literally diving into the depths of that and just trying to go back to, you know, your kind of inner child and those scars that haven't really healed all the way yet, or perhaps they have and it's all scar tissue that you've got to rip away. Those were the hardest emotionally. And it's crazy that even that amount of good scenes existed in one film and one project that I was so lucky to be able to do all of that in one go in like 20 days. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that right, Chad? 20 days?
Yeah, I think it was 23 days by the end, but that included us like, you know, going out with like three of us to shoot exteriors, you know?
Yeah. Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Shay?
I know what the hardest scene was for me. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
You can spoil. It's okay.
Are we sure?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably when I die.
There it is.
It was really hard. I've never played dead before. I've never done that. Like, of course you've done it when you were like little on a playground.
Yeah.
Like, and you're in elementary school and you're like, oh, mommy, help me. And you're like on a playground with wood chips. But like when you're actually on set, like, I don't know how to play dead. Like, I haven't done this before. Like, I've seen like a dead person, not like in real life, but like, you know, I know what they do, like their eyes are open or whatever, but I don't know how to do that.
You also had pumps on you and blood coming out.
Yeah, that was probably pretty hard because I just felt a bit awkward. Yeah. But I think, yeah.
Well, you did a good job.
Oh, thanks. And my favorite one to shoot, probably the hospital scene. Not because it was easy, but because it was also the last day of shooting for me. So I also felt like I could really pull my emotions from that and use it for that scene. Yeah, that was a sad one to watch. But it was fun at the same time because we were also in this like really big space. I think Chad said it was like an old school or something. And so there was just like a lot of space to play around and just talk to people. So it was like, I don't know. It was fun. I liked it.
There was also, if I could jump in, there's another scene where I'm in a police station. And that was actually the most challenging for me on like a technical actor level, because I think I went in with ideas about the scene, and then Chad like directed me in a way that I hadn't considered at all. And so I really was finding an entirely different scene sitting there in it. And it was challenging, but also so invigorating in a way that I haven't really experienced before at all. Because I feel like, you know, when you're doing TV or when you're doing projects that are kind of a bit more lighthearted, there's not, you know, the director will be like, that was good, that was fine, let's move on. But working with someone who has such a strong vision like Chad and is so detail oriented in such a effective way, we were finding things there on the day that were really just in the subconscious. It was really cool. And so when I watched that back, I was like, damn, that is perfect.
You killed
that too. I love that scene now. And when I left there, I was like, I don't know what the fuck I just did. I don't know what happened. And it's definitely one of my favorites now. So it's crazy how things like that work.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to let loose to do something like that. And yeah, you definitely did.
Thank you. Yeah. It's great.
That's awesome. You did a great, again, great. Everyone did such a great job. Like, did you have a favorite scene?
Yeah. Oh man, sorry. I'm having so much fun listening to everyone else. I forget to think about my own. Yeah. No. I mean, I had so much fun doing. I'll call it the finale. You know, everything in that world I had just pictured for so long, yeah. And It, we were shooting so quickly and we had to wrap because the SAG strike was coming and we had to finish, like, there was no time to kind of push the shoot or anything. So a lot of the sets were being built as we were shooting. And I remember the weekend before we shot this big kind of cavern thing. It's like I'd gone in and like there's nothing really there. So it's like a couple of us just all got together and started like painting and building things and just putting this whole kind of layer together. And like we were still putting up walls as the cast was like coming in to rehearse and stuff. So it wasn't until like everyone was ready to shoot that like the monitor went up and we got to see this like basic throne room kind of thing for the first time. And I was just, one, I was so happy that it looked awesome. Because really it's like you spend so much time and effort trying to kind of build something up, and without actually seeing it on camera, you're always like, does this look like shit? Is this going to ruin the movie? It's because, you know, there was all these ideas of doing in front of like a virtual screen and like, you know, small little sets and whatever. And I've just always wanted to kind of do like some big kind of cavern cave kind of idea. And the art department was awesome. They, you know, went on YouTube and found a bunch of weird YouTube videos of people doing this stuff. And really, it's like you have to commit to it. It's like you have to either spend all the money and just go for it and hope it works, or, you know, don't do it at all. So that was a really awesome moment, being able to do that and seeing, like, you know, Brooklyn as a creature, like finally there, finally facing off with Ashley. So that was definitely I think that was my most exciting one to do. Just because art department. But yeah, what was the other question? The worst one? Hardest one?
Worst.
Yeah. I mean, so many of them were hard, to be honest. Like there was points where we were shooting. We had a studio and we had different sets in it. And there was a day where we were shooting Jordan and Agatha in one room. And that was like Agatha's kitchen. Yeah. And right next, like at the wall behind it, we were shooting Cynthia walking into the house in Jordan's mind and like looking at the frames and going up the stairs and all that. And we had two cameras running and we were going like, all right, action Agatha, cut Agatha, action Cynthia. And it was like just trying to roll both at once because which is something that you don't generally do on a film set. Like, basically, when this is happening, everyone's going, oh, shit, things are going off the rails. You know? But we just never had any time to push anything. You know, it's like on a normal shoot, we'd be like, I'll push a couple days and, you know, we'll figure it out or whatever. But because the strike was coming, it was like as soon as that strike hits, everyone stops and we can't shoot anything else. So there were some chaotic days like that for sure. But everyone was such pros and, you know, everyone really pulled it together.
Yeah. I think it's funny that we as actors don't, like, I was aware that things were happening because we were, you know, on such a tight schedule, but I look back and I don't remember any of those stressful moments. I just remember being like, and then I said this line. So it's so interesting how, and because I was in my third year of film school when we shot this, I think I had seen both sides and just, what felt totally shielded from it so that we could, you know, protect the creative integrity of the performances. So kudos to you guys for being able to do that. I'm sure that was very hard.
Yeah, no, for sure. But it's, well,
yes, it's great. Again, I'm just going to keep applauding. First of all, it's hard making a movie, but then you have the SAG strike right on your ass. Like that's stressful. So kudos to you. So acting wise, I know horror films are probably the hardest to prep for, because I feel like every actor I've talked to who has been in a horror film is like afterwards, like, we're sick. It's just emotionally draining, physically draining. How do you mentally, physically, like actor wise prep for to be in a movie like this?
Do you want to go first, Shailen?
You can go first.
Well, generally, I think I was saying this earlier too, I didn't really realize what I was getting myself into or how intense it was going to feel. So I was just kind of approaching it like I've approached everything else, you know, be prepared, show up, give it your best, forget about it. You can't change anything, forget about it, and then keep it pushing. But yeah, I would come home from days of like fighting for my life and be like, why am I so tired? Like, I had 4 Diet Cokes and a coffee. Like, what's going on? So I would be just confused. But yeah, I think it kind of lives in your body in a way that your brain might not fully be aware of. And that's definitely how I felt by the end. But again, I mean, how often do you get that opportunity, right? So I'm glad that we left it all out there. And I could definitely hear my dad's voice. My brothers were always athletes growing up, and my dad would definitely be the sports dad that's like, right, come on, give it another. And I could hear him in my head every day be like, just one more take, right, come on. totally that. Very Scottish, very Glaswegian. So it was exhausting, and I think that is a sign sometimes of leaving it all out there, and I wouldn't have changed it at all. How about you? Okay.
I assume you're talking about like not like how you care for yourself after, like after your, like how do you?
Yeah, however you want to answer. There are no
okay. Honestly, like I was pretty tired. I was tired for like the last 2 days, but then I had school right after that, so I kind of had to jump back in there, and so it was like, okay, next thing, you know. It's not that like I wasn't like upset about it. I was upset, but I was like, okay, we gotta now. Yeah. I have school now. I have other things, but it was like, when you're young, I think you have to move on fast.
I think you can move on faster. Yeah, we were actually saying earlier with Shay that it was and Ellie, you weren't on that conversation, but it was always so surprising to see Shaylin change from like, hey, we're all getting ready to shoot and we're doing this big huge emotional scene and she's crying and you know, but right now, like, we're 30 seconds away from shooting, but right now she's, you know, singing and dancing and like seems like the happiest kid in the world. And you know, as a director, I'm kind of like, let's all relax here, you know, we gotta get in this, calm down or whatever. But man, it would just be like boom, snap. Yeah. And she's such a pro. And I mean, I think, you know, it just shows, Shay, your natural talent of, you know, how I don't even think you know how, you know, much of a talent that actually is to be able to kind of like be able to turn it on and off like that so quickly. So kudos for sure.
Thanks. It wasn't too stressful, because moments like that where my mom's dying or where I'm dying, that's not real, right? Like, of course, to the viewers who are watching it, it feels real, but when you're shooting it, you have to make it real for yourself. And then when someone calls cut, then the moment's kind of over. And it's like, I want to describe it as like an ocean wave, like, you know how it goes up for a minute and then it just, you know, goes down.
That was never there.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like for me.
Yeah.
That's a great describe it. That's good. Thanks. So you're able to turn it on and off. When it comes to crying on camera, I know that a lot of actors struggle with that. What do you have, like a trick, and what do you guys do to like, you know, really hone that in?
Are you asking me?
Either one, both. Yeah, I mean, you seem to be.
I'm curious about this too, Shay. You do it so well.
I don't feel like there really are a lot of tricks. I feel like beforehand you really have to study the character and understand what your character is going through. And when you're taping, you just, it's a real thing. You're in that character's life, and so you have to feel what they're feeling. I don't know, like sometimes it does take me a minute to cry. Like I have to like look at something for a second, and then I'm like, okay, I can do it. But then, you know, it's that sort of thing. I don't really know how I'm explaining this.
Well, I think that's a great answer, Shailen. I agree. I think that, like, there, once I had realized, probably when I was around a teenager, maybe around your age, Shailen, that, like, a scene is still good, even if you don't cry. Like, if that might be what somebody would think from reading it. But if you put that pressure on yourself, okay, like in this scene at this moment, I have to start crying. That doesn't, that has never worked for me. So I think just releasing the expectation and allowing the scene to go where it goes.
Yeah. That's okay. That's really helpful for me to get my words out now. Thank you, Ellie. It's like, I guess if it happens, it happens.
Yes.
That's what I was trying to say. I couldn't like put that into words, but you know what? That you're right. If it happens, it happens.
And that is awesome, because I mean, it's I've definitely been in situations where, you know, working on set and the environment's not right, and you can tell when someone is going through an emotional scene and trying to cry, and it's not necessary that they need to, as long as they're feeling real about it. But you know, when you can see that in someone, in an actor's eye, that they're really, really trying to cry, it's always a bummer. Like, it's always, it's a bummer, only because it's like, you know, exactly saying that. It's like, if you don't cry, that's okay. As long as you're getting the emotion across, you know?
Yeah. It's like, it's not like people are going to kick you off the set if you don't cry.
You're fired.
Why not?
That's awesome. So another acting question for you guys. When it comes to memorizing lines, everybody has a different tactic or way to approach it. I find it fascinating. I know my viewers find it fascinating. How do you guys approach memorizing lines?
Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely a skill that I have found easier as time goes on, as I've been working and auditioning, etc. But I remember being in high school and my teacher made us take like a learning style quiz. And I realized I had always thought of myself as like, I'm a kinesthetic learner. Like I have to do, I don't know. I thought that was like a different way to, I don't know. We won't get into it, but I realized that I was actually an auditory learner and that I needed to hear things aloud to be able to retain them. Mm-hmm. So I just try and record my lines and play them back to myself, or record other characters' lines, play them back to myself as much as I can. And then I do them all throughout, you know, the day. I feel the more time I have with it, obviously the better, just because you can get the feeling of saying those words in tons of different mindsets. Like maybe one day you're feeling just kind of bleh and you're reading your lines. And then another day you're feeling really excited about something else, totally separate from what you're doing, but you're reading your lines and that's maybe bringing something else into them. Mm-hmm. So, for me, it has to be auditory, but it definitely is just something that I think comes with practice. I think most people think that it's an impossible task, but if you practice it forever and ever, totally is easier than you would think. Okay. How about you, Shailen?
Mine was pretty structured. When I had to learn like my first lot, like whole lot of lines, I was doing a movie called Wild Goat Surf, and I was the lead in that. And I had,
which is a great movie, by the way. It's really good.
There were so many lines to learn, but my acting coach, Bracken, she's so great. She told me, why don't you do flashcards for your scenes? Write down what is happening in each scene on flashcards. I had them up on my wall and it was like first scene, second scene, third scene, all the way to the end. And you pick a flashcard, you go to the scene and you memorize it. And so when I memorize it, I literally say to myself, I am a sponge. I am a sponge. I am going to get this in my head. Yeah, it was when I first started memorizing like a whole lot of lines, it was pretty structured. So, yeah.
It's an art form on its own, honestly. Like I wrote the script, I rewrote the script. I read it 1,000 times and I'd still call cut and I'd go to Ellie and be like, so what line is it? What line do you say? And you tell him, be like, yeah, that one. You know? I'd like, for the life of me, I could never be an actor.
No, it's hard. I like, everyone has like a different way to memorize lines. And I'm always trying to find like the best way. In high school, it was just doing laps around my apartment, just reading the same line because that works well in my brain. But now I'm like, okay, I'm mid-20s. How do I, that no longer works. What works?
What's next?
The paper method, which is a serial killer method. You write down the line on a flashcard, but you write the first letter of every single word on a flashcard, and you...
Cool. It's
insane.
That's cool. I haven't heard that.
Okay, a couple more questions for you guys. This is honestly, it's not even a question. It's more of a, I need to let you know. Because I don't know if you were aware that John Ashmore, you're in the presence of royalty from the Disney Channel original movie, Kadeli.
Yeah. Okay. My friends were telling me about that the other day, and I was like, I didn't even know I was missing out on such an iconic piece of media. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. As soon as it came on the screen, I was like, oh my God, Cadet Kelly.
Yeah.
So, you haven't seen it, go watch it. That's all I'm going to say. Cool. That's what I'm going to do. Because I would have been mad at myself if I didn't bring that up. Okay. Is there anything, because, you know, despite all the challenges, you know, what you made a film, amazing, awesome. It's out there. People can watch it. But we are perfectionists as filmmakers, as actors. Is there anything you would change? You had more time, more money, that are there next day. What would you do? If any.
Oh, man. Well, one, there was a ton of stuff in the script that we never actually shot that I've always wanted to shoot. So, that for sure. I mean, it's so tricky right now because I think when a movie comes together, and as hard as this one was to kind of pull together, I really had a good time watching it. I think I've watched this movie more times than I've watched any film I've ever done. And I'm really excited to see it with audiences, which, you know, is really generally nerve-wracking. It's like, I usually hate it. Like, you sit in the back and you just stress about scenes that didn't work out. I think this is the first film that I've done where it's like, there's really not that many of those. You know, sit down and watch it with people. I think so much of it is just, you know, excited to see things come together. So, I mean, I feel like now that the film's in the place that it is, I feel like it's like built this house of cards, and I'm like, I don't want to touch it. Things are good. People are liking it. I don't want to touch it.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I think for me, I think it's hard as an actor to watch something back and say, oh, I would have changed that. Like, or I should have done that different. I mean, I absolutely do that. And every single scene I go, oh my God, why did I say that like that? Why did I do this? Like, I watch it, and by the end, I've convinced myself I'm never going to work again on every project I've ever done. It's never been true, but like, you know, I feel that most of my peers anyway, that are actors, feel that way, because it's so difficult to look at yourself playing a different person and feel truthful about it. So I don't think there is, I think one moment where I'm like holding Shaylin and she's like dying, and I just go like, and it's so, the way I go, I'm like, stop, you're such an actor. But like, there will never be none of those. Yeah. And I think it's just like, overall, you have to watch it and let it be, it's not about you. It's about the experience that people leave with. And, I think that does stand above all of my annoying actor things that I see. So, yeah.
That's too funny that you would bring up a moment like that. Like, I would never in a million years pick out a moment
insane.
Like that.
It's ridiculous.
But I get it as well. I have a hard time. I can't even watch myself on podcasts.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's so hard. Also, Allie, I'm surprised you didn't bring up like the hardest scene being buried alive.
Yes, I think I try to avoid the spoilers, and also I know my mom, like my mom watches all like my interviews and stuff. She's my biggest fan. Thanks, Maureen. And her biggest fear is getting buried alive. So I'm trying not to stress her out because I want her to watch it. I know she's going to be like, oh my God, get out there. Oh my God. She's going to be like, so I'm excited to see that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's so fun. Okay. Two more and then we're done. These are the fun ones, the silly ones. So, everybody has that one film, that one show that scared them as a kid, that stuck with them. What was the first horror movie or non-horror movie that scared you?
Who wants to go first?
Oh, to be honest, I don't know what the first one was. I think I was a weird child that fell in love with horror movies. I think I definitely have gone back and looked at photos and figured out and pinpointed. I was in like grade 2 or 3 and I was like drawing Chucky and like making Freddy Krueger hands. Like, I feel like in the 90s, 80s, 90s, it was like horror movies were like weird cartoons, you know? Like, kids would watch them and like, you know, draw the characters, and they were almost like comic book movies kind of thing. So, I mean, it was so different back then. I remember, you know, watching the first Hellraiser, being really freaked out by that. It's funny because it was like I was older at this point, but I do always remember watching The Ring for the first time. And it was like, that was always just one of the scariest films for me. And it's hard because it's like, I know The Ring's been parodied to hell now. And like, you know, it almost got too popular that now it's not cool to like The Ring, but but really it was like the first time watching it, I was like, holy shit. One, this is like a piece of art. Like, Gore Verbinski just absolutely killed that. And the imagery in it was just so awesome. And I do remember I was watching in a theater and it was like sold out, and it was in like Etobicoke just outside of Toronto. And there was just like in the middle of it, near the end, it was like when she comes out of the TV, I remember this dude who was like, had like a tank top on and like a bunch of chains, and he was just ripped, and he was in the middle of the theater, and he got up and he's like, screw this bullshit. And he was like popcorn flying everywhere and drinks. And he was like, Terry, he was just like, I got to get out of here right now. Which is, you know, so awesome to see. And I mean, that's what, you know, you love about horror movies. It's just that, you know, getting those reactions from people are so fun. Like at our Canadian premiere, we have a team of people with night vision cameras, and they're actually filming the audience to get audience reactions for a little commercial that we're doing. So I feel like I'm just going to sit there and watch those. I just am like, it's going to be amazing. So,
yeah. I mean, I remember, I think my dad had taken my sister and I, who's 2 years younger than me, to see Coraline, which must have been already now. Oh my God, that really freaked me the freak out. Like, I remember sitting in my chair and feeling like there's like a part where the other mother's hand gets cut off, and it's just like this creepy crawly, almost like a butt. It's like a creature thing. Her hand is like crawling around. And I remember my legs like swinging over my chair and suddenly being like, I'm in danger. And I had to tuck my feet up like this. And my dad's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, she's going to come grab my feet. Like, she's going to. And my dad's like, all right, girl. But that I remember being very viscerally terrified by. And I think part of it is like children in peril, like young girls in peril, has always really resonated. I think that also happens in Ifeed, segue much. That's perfect. I think that it does resonate that way for me. Totally. Coraline so freaky, and Monster House really freaky.
Yeah.
well, I guess animated horror.
Or Monster House is like terrifying.
It's really weird. Like it's anamorphic. I remember this, it gave me this icky feeling in my stomach that I couldn't describe. It's interesting how much of that you remember. Even now, rewatching those things, I remember exactly how I felt as a kid. It's not scary anymore, but yeah. You go back to that place. Totally.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. How about you, Shay? you were moving around with Coraline. You're like, absolutely not.
I was such a skittish child. It was insane. Well, number one, it was because when I was in middle school, there's this girl at my school who would tell me like these creepy stories all the time about like Bloody Mary and blah, blah, blah. And my friends wanted to do it in the washroom with me. They would literally push me in the washroom. Go do it. No, no. And like, I watched Coraline, which really scared me. And then there was two others. There was one that was like, they had like wires for necks and like wires for arms. And then like, little balls for heads and feet and torso. It was like a kid's cartoon. It wasn't meant to be creepy.
Is but it Rolly like, Polly?
Yes! Yes! Stop! That scared me. And then...
Rolly Polly Oli is like teaching you the alphabet.
No, I hated Rolly Polly Oli. There was something so weird with that. And then... there was another one where it was like this kid had like a music box in his chest, and I found it back on TikTok. I was like, I remember this movie. I remember the visuals. I could not remember the name of it, but I went on TikTok the other day, and then it was like told me the name. I can't remember the name right now, but it was like this kid who had like a music box in his heart, and he was like getting bullied, and I was like, I can't watch this. This is like
that's funny, the things you remember.
I was so scared of everything. It was yeah. No, I didn't want to go anywhere alone. I was really frightened.
And now you're a scream queen.
Honestly, yeah. Now, now I just like, I guess I kind of embrace it. Because like after seeing something like, I don't know, like Interview with a Vampire or seeing the TV show Shameless, I guess it doesn't really faze you anymore. You're like, okay. But yeah.
And the more you... other side of the camera, you're like, oh, these are, you know, even if you do get scared, you're like, these are actors. They're reading in a room with about 100 people in it. It's really scary. It's actually more than anything. So, and then you start to laugh, and then it's not scary anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the way I think we had the same childhood though with Bloody Mary, because I had that experience too, and I nightmares for days.
I know. There was this girl at my school. She would tell me about like these creepy. She would tell me about these really creepy things like statues and Bloody Mary and moving statues. And I was terrified. I was like, okay, Mom, I need help. What is happening? Like, I'm scared. I don't want to talk to this girl. And then like, I grew out of it. But then recently I just remembered all the things she told me. And I was like, how are you even allowed to like say that to one of your friends? Like, I don't know. That was a lot.
Oh my goodness. That's too much. So funny. And Rolly Polly Oli. Hilarious. Mine was the original Spider-Man that terrified me.
Oh yeah.
Green Goblin. That scene. Oof, terrifying. So final question, and this is probably the silliest one, and it's a pun in itself on the title of my podcast. Do you think audiences will be afraidy or not afraidy of It Feeds?
Do you want to go first, Chad?
I hope they'll be afraidy. Yeah, I mean, this was the first movie that that I've done, to be honest, where I was like, I want to scare the shit out of people with this. Like, we've done movies that were creepy, some scares, we've done movies that were gross, you know, this was the first one that I was like, yeah, no, I want to scare people. Yeah. So hopefully afraidy.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm team afraidy too. I think, because it's so psychological, I was saying that the kind of, the essence of the demon is something that I think everyone has their own demon. Mm-hmm. I think you take it with you outside of the theater and hopefully think about it a little bit. And that can be scarier than, you know, any jump scare. You're like, damn, I gotta go back to when I was a kid and think about how why I'm so angry all the time or why I'm so anxious all the time. You know, that's a big task. So, and that's basically what our characters have to go through in the film. So it's different. And I think people will be afraidy in a new novel way.
Okay, you think you're gonna be afraidy?
I hope they're afraidy. Yeah, I mean, like, the reason why is because it wasn't just like a psychological horror where you feel like there's something like lurking around. It wasn't just that. Like, you see some really gory stuff in there. Like, I've seen gory stuff, but that's quite a bit. So I hope they're pretty.
And where are people able to find this when it comes out?
Yeah, it comes out in theaters in Canada April 16th across the country. And then in the US, it comes out in theaters and VOD on April 18th. In the UK, it comes out May 12th, and Ireland as well.
Thank you so much to everybody for chatting with me. It's such a great movie. You guys go see it. Feeds. Please, please, please. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. You know, so good. Fangoria. Thank you to Fangoria. You want a copy of Fangoria? Use code KDFrady25 for 25% off. And thank you to our sponsor, Filmcraft Studio Gear. You can find them at filmcraftla.com or on Instagram at filmcraftla. And yeah, guys, that's the episode. We will see you next time, and stay spooky.
We're afraid.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.